You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini, educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with the Deal Farm on today's Best Deal Ever episode. I'm joined by Kevin Bupp. Kevin is actually the host of the Real Estate Investing for Cashflow podcast, as well as the Mobile Home Park Academy. He's actually got 16 years of experience locating, acquiring, really higher than average returns from the widely misunderstood niche of mobile home park investing. And this is a space that I don't know a whole lot about, but I am super excited to learn about. So Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to spending some time with you today, my friend.
Well, absolutely. You know, you are in a space that honestly has intrigued me for years, and I just don't know a whole lot about it. So diving into the whole mobile home park investing thing is super exciting for me. So, but before you got into mobile home park investing, take us back. What were you doing? Were you in apartments? Were you in residential? Or have you always been doing mobile home parks?
Actually, really all of the above. So, I mean, I'll go back to the very beginning. I was a terrible high school student. So like I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I barely graduated high school. And I really did barely just graduate high school by the skin of my teeth. I don't know how it happened, but probably like a 1.8 grade point average when I left high school.
Nice.
And I didn't really – it was really bad. I was a bad student. I don't know how I turned out good, but I was a really bad student back then and got in a lot of trouble. And anyway, I just didn't really know what path I was going to take in life. And so I started attending bars. Going to community college, which was like seemed like the best option for me. I was having fun meeting girls, bartending, and going to community college, just taking classes to take classes. And just got really lucky at a point in time when I met an individual. He came into my life through a girl I was dating. He happened to be a guy that was dating my girlfriend's mother at the time. And he was a local real estate investor. And he must have saw like a lost kid in me. I think that's what happened. I didn't think that at the time, but he must have seen something in me. Either, you know, I want to help this kid out. He seems like he's kind of struggling, figuring out what he's going to do in life. Mm-hmm. And he was a local real estate investor, and he took me underneath his wing. He introduced me to real estate. Primarily back then was single family homes. That's what he focused in. He had some small apartments as well. And so at the age of 19, I guess you could say I got started then, but I kind of followed him around like a little puppy dog for like a year, just literally watching what he did, learning everything that he did, meeting with contractors, meeting with brokers, and just all the above. You know, literally sitting in his office on the downtimes that I wasn't going to community college or attending bar, went and met him in his home office and just sat there and listened to him on his conversations and just absorbed as much as I could. And so that was my start into real estate. It was just something I felt that I could grab onto. And I knew I needed something in my life, and that was it at that point in time. And so I figured, hey, if he can do it, and some of the other people I met, if they could do it, then I should be able to do it, right? And
sure.
I wanted to make money at that point in my life, and so I started buying and fixing up, and primarily with the intent of having long-term cash flow, single-family homes in central Pennsylvania. That's where I was born and raised, and continued to do that for a couple of years in Pennsylvania before moving down to Florida back in 2002. And I moved down to Florida in 2002 and continued in a big way, really ramping things up and buying a lot of single family homes. We did some flipping, we did some wholesaling, but primarily we did what we bought before was just long term cash flow. We were looking to build long term a big time rental portfolio that was to bring us money each and every month. And so we did that for a number of years, as well as buying apartment buildings, acquired a few hundred apartment units as well. And just to make a long story short, all that kind of came to a crashing halt and basically got turned upside down during the downturn of 2007-2008. And so all those years that I had worked to build that very large portfolio, it kind of vanished within a matter of a year when the market crashed. And so that was a tough time, and I took a hiatus from real estate for a number of years. I lost pretty much 99% of what I had built up.
Oh, wow.
Retained some investments and had to sell some at the bottom of the market just because we were just really strapped for cash. And so it was just a really tough time. But wanted to rebuild myself. Knew I wanted to get back into real estate at some point in time. And so I got really lucky again. You know, I just was out there seeking for answers. I knew I wanted to get into multifamily this time around. You know, single family just really wasn't. I didn't want to spend as much time building up that portfolio again. I knew I could do it faster with multifamily. And then I just got really lucky one day. through a mutual friend, was introduced to a gentleman that was in mobile home parks. He'd been in the finance side of it for 20 plus years, and then started it as an owner operator after his retirement from the bank he worked for. And met with him for lunch one day, and as I was kind of like on this soul searching mission, and this is like late 2010. As to what I was going to do on this next round of my real estate endeavors. And that lunch just changed the course of my life forever, because at that point in time, I said, man, there's something to this mobile home park space. I need to learn more about it. And it sounds like this is something I could really grab onto. And that's what I did. I mean, I literally learned as much as I could. And today it's about 5 years later. That's all we invest in. We own parks now in 7 different states, soon to be 8 different states, and are just are really, really satisfied with the results that we've gotten from our investments. And I can tell you that they perform better than anything I've ever owned previously from a cash flow standpoint. So that's like the long and short of it. So that's kind of like the 10,000 foot view of my life, how I got into real estate, how I lost everything, and then now where we're at today, which is mobile home park investing.
It's so interesting that somebody that has done residential, that's done apartment, eventually landed on mobile home parks, a better investment for me than what everybody else is investing in.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? What's the draw to mobile home park investing?
You know, there's some unique draws to it. You know, one being, this is a very unique statistic that a lot of people don't know. It's the only asset class of real estate that has a diminishing supply. And what that means is that there's approximately, no one knows the exact number, but there's approximately 50,000 mobile home parks in the U.S. today. Majority of those were built in the 60s and the 70s. You know, some before that, some after, but 60s and 70s was kind of like the heyday for mobile home park development. Well, as most people know, like mobile home parks in general, trailer parks, whatever you want to call them, they kind of got a bad rep. I mean, they got this negative stigma that's attached to them. And, you know, the truth is that there are a lot out there that really deserve that negative stigma, but there's a lot that don't. But anyway, they have a negative stigma. And what's happened is over the years, local municipalities, governments, cities, towns, they don't want them anymore. And so they do not issue permits for them to be built. So it's very difficult to go get approval to build a new mobile home park. And so what's happened is, you know, maybe last year there was 5 or 6 that were built in the entire country, and there was probably about 500 that were demolished or shut down. You know, maybe it's because they were on land that had a higher and better use as a shopping center, or maybe they were just shut down because they weren't run properly. Maybe the health department came in and shut them down. But either way, they have a diminishing supply, so that creates this massive barrier to entry, right? Because you don't necessarily have to worry about a new developer coming in and building a new mobile home park right down the road from yours. And so that was one of the things that attracted me to it, is that we knew that if I could buy – you know, good quality parks in really strong markets that have a high demand for affordable housing, that I didn't have to worry about a competitor coming in and building a new one right down the road and stealing, you know, my tenant base. So that was really, really intriguing to me. And, you know, another big thing that we really like about mobile home parks is that we can all agree that there's an ever-growing demand for affordable housing in this country, right? I mean, it's not
– sure.
And we're not meeting that supply. The supply is growing faster, or the demand's growing faster than the supply. And so mobile home parks really fit a unique void in that affordable housing niche, because it's really the lowest end price bracket. And what I mean by that is, you know, let's talk about apartment living right now. If, you know, either you live in an A class apartment, if you can't afford to live in an A class apartment building, you live in a B class. If you can't afford to live in a B class, you live in a C class. If you can't afford to live in a C class, you go to a war zone and live in a D class. And, you know, if you can't afford to live in a D class, then you live in a shelter or underneath the bridge, right? And so that's kind of – I mean, it's the truth.
Sure.
And so mobile home parks are kind of like the C class option of affordable housing. And so if your option at that point in time, you have the choice to live in a low-end C-class apartment building, or with a mobile home park, you've got a sense of community, you have your own space, you can own the home. A lot of mobile home park owners give the option to the tenants to buy the homes, where they might not ever have the option of becoming a homeowner any other way. They have their own yard, they put Christmas lights out. So it's a unique option for those that are in that lower income demographic. And it's just I think it fills a great void for those that want to live the American dream, own a home, but probably would never ever make enough money or be in the right position to ever buy a stick-built home. And so there's a lot of other reasons as well, but those are some of the big ones that really attract us to the mobile home park space. And so anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you find that much of your clientele in the mobile home parks really are only interested in mobile homes. Maybe that's just sort of culturally, that's what they, the only thing they know. They're not even looking at apartments. Or do you find that people are weighing either an apartment or a mobile home?
Yeah, either way, I think that you'll find – I mean, I, and I know this because I look at a lot of our tenant applications, and I can see where their previous rental history was. And I see that a lot of them have lived in other mobile home parks, but a lot of them have lived in apartments as well. And so, you know, it's a mixture of the two. You know, I think the thing that attracts a lot of people, let's say that they were living in an apartment and they come over to a mobile home, is that, you know, like in a lot of our communities, we offer like rent-to-own options, and we make it really easy for – good, hardworking, qualified people to own the home in a short period of time. And so I think that's very attractive to them, because not only can they own their own home, which they never thought was possible, but once they own their own home in our community, their monthly payment goes down. A lot of times gets cut in half, because once they own their own home, their own responsibility at that point is just paying the lot rent. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very attractive option for them that a lot of them just didn't even know it existed before. And then there's others that that's all they've known. You know, they've lived in parks for years and they kind of just jump around to the different parks, you know, mm-hmm, until they find the one that they really like.
Interesting. So most of your parks then is the goal to just get the lot rent, or is the goal to just to rent them out, or some combination of the two?
Yeah, the goal is to get just the lot rent. And we own a hybrid of, you know, of parks that are just all lot renters. And that's the ideal situation, right? Because our only job is to maintain the infrastructure, meaning like the roads and the sewer lines and the water lines, the common grounds. And we just basically rent the dirt to the tenants. Like, that is the ideal scenario, because when their air conditioning breaks or their mm-hmm. roof leaks or anything like that, they don't call us. Mm-hmm. They call the plumber or the handyman up to come fix it. They don't call us. And so that's the ideal scenario. I mean, you're just basically renting dirt and you're maintaining the common grounds. Then we have some parks that are kind of a hybrid of the two, you know, where let's say 80% of the residents, they own their own home. They just pay lot rent. But then we own 20% of the homes. In those scenarios, typically we don't create that scenario. We kind of have bought into it. So when we bought the park, it just ended up coming with some rental units. And so when we buy a park like that, our goal is to turn it into a full lot rental park. And it mm-hmm. takes some time. But typically what we do is we offer like the affordable rent to own options, or we will sell the homes for cash to those buyers that want to just be, you know, lot renter type tenants. And so it's always our goal to turn it into the lot renter scenario, because that's the ideal, right? It's lower maintenance, lower upkeep, and just less headaches. You know, sure. It's less management intensive.
Interesting. I guess I just assumed, or probably most people assume, that if you own a mobile home park, that you're just renting all these units out and you're trying to maintain them, and what a nightmare that could be.
But some do. Some do. Okay. I mean, yeah, in fact, you know, I was talking to you, Ken, about the park that we own in your market mm-hmm. in Atlanta.
Right.
And that park, we actually acquired that is a unique situation. It was a bank-owned property. It was mostly all vacant, but it had homes that came with it, and they were newer mobile homes, and we basically bought – almost an entirely vacant mobile home park that came with homes. And so we still own a majority of those homes today. It's been a number of years, and we've been trying to transition it into a lot rental type community. But that market's what we found is that there's not a lot of that demographic doesn't really serve to be homeowners very well. They're more of a renter mentality. And so mm-hmm. that park is actually one of our parks where a majority are still rentals. But it does quite well. You know, it's all about the system, the process that you have in place. I mean, we really strive to find the best tenants for our community. I mean, so we, you know, we do full background checks. We don't allow people with prior evictions or felonies, or, you know, we look at their collections and we look at their trade lines, positive trade lines. We look at their employment, you know, so we're basically qualifying them. And so, it's really just like running a C-class apartment building is what it's like.
Sure.
And, as long as you've got the managerial systems and processes in place, it's really not that big of a deal. In fact, that park there makes a ton of money. It's a smaller park, and it makes a ton of money because it's primarily a rental park. But it does have more headaches that come along with it as well.
Sure, yeah, trying to maintain all those different trailers.
I mean, it's just like maintaining homes.
Sure.
You know, it's the same thing as having like a batch of, you know, 30 or 40 homes, like literally on the same in the same neighborhood, kind of same idea.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the back of my mind, I've got – and there probably is a stigma with the type of clientele living in a mobile home park and just managing that in general. And you being in 7 different states, soon to be 8 states, what does that look like? How do you manage that type of clientele, and what sort of property management systems do you have in place?
Yeah, so we every single one of our communities has a live-in manager, meaning like we have someone that's either an individual or a couple, husband and wife. A lot of times that's a preference, but it's not always what we find. But we have someone that lives in the community. So they're a full-time community manager. They live in the community. They handle rent collections. They handle late notices. They handle evictions. They basically handle the day-to-day. They handle vendor contacts. So if we have, you know, a sewer backup, or if we have one of our rental units, if the AC goes out, anything like that, they basically handle the day-to-day. They make deposits for us. They have access to our rental management software. And so we see when they input things, we see when they do, you know, tenant evictions or, you know, collections notices or anything like that. So basically there are eyes and ears on the ground at the community. And now in our office, in our main office, we have call that person a, you know, call them a regional manager. And so they basically are in charge of all the individual managers at our parks. Mm-hmm. And so they check in on a daily basis, get updates, get reports back from the managers, you know, how many vacant units do we have, you know, what's available now, what's leasing, what marketing you doing. So we've got someone here in our office that basically deals with each individual manager there in the location on a regular basis and just oversees them.
Interesting. So when you come in and you buy a park in a state and you're not familiar necessarily with the area, where do you start? Do you just immediately start interviewing for somebody to come in and be a live-in manager? Is that step one, I guess?
A lot of the common thing with mobile home parks is that they have someone that's already a live-in manager. That's a pretty common part of the business model. Now, sometimes it's the actual owner that we just bought the park from. And so when we buy it, they're leaving, right? And so we just bought a park in Kentucky. A couple of weeks ago, we closed on it, and the person we bought it from, he actually lived in the park. He's owned it for like 20 some odd years, and like him and his family have run this park. And so in that scenario, we had to go find a new manager because our manager, the owner, previous owner, was leaving as soon as we bought it. He wasn't going to stay there. And so sometimes we maintain the original management. If that's, you know, a lot of times we find that that's the part that's broken. You know, we buy a lot of distressed things or things that just really the revenue hasn't been maximized or realized. And so if we find out that the management is the part that's broken, then we will. We'll immediately start looking for a new management. In fact, we even start doing the interviews prior to us even closing on a park. Like we're ready to go if we know that that is the problem, you know, if that's part of the problem.
Sure.
So a lot of it just comes down to you know, you ask me how we, you know, get to know the market. I mean, hiring new managers more so just putting Craigslist ads out there or going into the park itself and finding who's the responsible person in the park already. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there's always going to be a few responsible people there. Who's lived there the longest? We're looking for someone that's got some computer skills, some good communication skills, and can do basic bookkeeping. That's really what we're looking for. And a lot of times we can find it within the park. In fact, that park in Kentucky I just told you about, one of the residents there, he's lived there for about 15 years, and he became our new manager, and he's doing quite awesome. So we didn't have to even go outside. We just did it from within.
Interesting. Crazy. So you're out there sourcing parks in other markets, obviously, like this one in Kentucky. How are you finding these? Who are you going to find these types of deals?
We do it all internally. So we, more importantly to us, we research markets, and we've got data now collected on hundreds of markets. And when I say hundreds of markets, I don't mean like hundreds of major metros, but I mean it could be smaller metros, they could be secondary markets, tertiary markets, even. Mm-hmm. You know, so we do the research on the markets first, and once we identify markets that meet our criteria, you know, we look at things like median house prices, we look at median rental rates, we look at, you know, what the supply of vacant housing is in that particular market, we look at unemployment rates, like all those important stats, so that we can build a story as to whether or not there should be a demand or there is a demand for affordable housing in that marketplace. And so once we identify a market, something that we feel would be well suited for us to own a park. And once we identify that market, then we go in that market itself and we basically build our own database of every single mobile home park that exists in that marketplace. And we dig in and we find the owner's name and their phone numbers and all the information, you know, when it last sold, what they paid for it. We even do like cold calling to all the other parks in that market, finding out what their lot rents are, what their vacancy is. And, you know, the cool thing about mobile home parks is visibly, they're very easy to pick apart from like an apartment building, like from an aerial standpoint. So we literally just get on Google Earth. And we look on Google Earth and we just scan that market visually. And you can easily pick out the mobile home parks. And so we build our database and we proactively, you know, prospect on the owners. You know, we send them direct mails. We cold call them. We visit them in person if we happen to be in that marketplace. You know, if we're visiting for another park we might own. And so we do it all ourselves. We don't necessarily use a lot of brokers. A lot of the parks, in fact, every single park we bought this year, we bought seven this year so far. they've all been off market. They weren't even for sale. Like, really? We've just gone direct to owners. And a couple of them have been kind of like, they've been deals that we've been working on for like a year or two. You know, we've been literally made their initial contact 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and they just happened to close this year. Because nothing ever that we buy is ever for sale.
Yeah.
And so it takes a little bit of time to kind of get them into the motions of, oh, yeah, this is a good idea. You know, here's all my paperwork. Here's my financials. Like, it's not already prepared, and it takes some time.
Right.
But, we go direct to owners most of the time.
Is there a quick and easy way to build a list of available parks? I mean, is there –
quick and easy? No. Unfortunately not. And you know, for every other asset class, there is a quick and easy way to do it. I mean, if you wanted to go get every retail shopping center in Clayton County, which is, you know, we were talking about that earlier, that's in the Atlanta metro area, mm-hmm. you can go to the county, or you can go to a bunch of different list sites, you know, like listsource.com, and you can easily filter it out. Well, here's the challenge with mobile home parks. There's so far, I've seen parks that have like seven, you know, there's not like one set zoning for mobile home parks. So like, there is a mobile home park designation that exists in a lot of counties, mm-hmm. but there are a ton of parks out there that do not have that designation. In fact, they have, you know, I've seen them zoned as agricultural. I've seen them zoned as residential land. I've seen them zoned as industrial land. I've seen them zoned as like office space. I've seen them zoned as everything. And so if you just went to the county, or you went to like a listsource.com, they might have a filter for mobile home parks. But if you bought that list, you'd probably be missing, depending on the market or the metro, you could be missing up to 50% of the actual mobile home parks that exist in that particular county or state. Yeah. So it's not as easy as just buying a list. And it's because of the zoning issues. A lot of these parks, a lot of these things, it's quite interesting. Back when the heyday was happening, a lot of people, they're like, oh gosh, I got this 10 acres of land, and I see that this mobile home thing it's kind of happening. So I'm going to take this 10 acres of farmland I have, and I'm just going to plop some roads in and put some mobile homes there. And then what happened over time is that the counties, they never really approved it to be built, but then they just accepted that it's there, and so it kind of gets grandfathered in. So it's what we call a legal non-conforming mobile home park, and so that's why they end up with these funky zonings. Like that one I just mentioned, it could have been zoned agricultural still. Wow. And so there's no way that you would have ever been able to find it by going to county records and searching mobile home park zoning. And so, yeah, it takes a lot of time to build the database, but that's the cool thing is that it takes time to do it, and a lot of people aren't willing to put the time in. So if you are willing to put the time in and build your own database, you work on a lot of deals, or you have access to a lot of leads that others just won't ever see or find.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And that's the same thing with residential or apartment, really, that finding those off-market deals, especially the ones that are hardest to find, that's usually where you're going to make your money.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Interesting. Yep. So, you know, for somebody that's interested in getting started in something like this, what do you recommend in terms of like the size of a park? What's a normal size? What's a small one? What's a large one?
You know, I'd say you really start finding some scales of economies once you get to like a 40-space park or larger. And that can vary based on like what the actual lot rents are. Like some markets have really low lot rents, like in the low 100 range. And then some markets have lot rents in the $700 plus range, you know. So, just kind of giving you like a general rule of thumb, like our criteria – We really won't look at parks unless they're 40 to 50 spaces or larger. Like that's kind of our minimum, because what we find is that that size of park can truly afford to pay a quality on-site manager to live there, because we do pay them a salary, give them free housing. The smaller park you get, obviously the less revenues you have, and so you know you start cutting corners a little bit with regards to like what you can pay your manager and what you can pay the handyman that's going to help you repair things around that park. And so I really find that the scales of economy really kick in about 40 or 50 spaces. So not that you can't make money smaller. Like, for instance, that the park I told you we own in Atlanta, it's the smallest park that we have in our entire portfolio. That one's only 35 spaces, but the lot rent in that park is $350 a month. And wow. So, yeah, I mean, the lot, and so that, but it's a rental. We own a lot of the homes in there, and so we get good rental rates. It's a good rental market, and we can afford. Our manager there does a great job, and we can afford, even though it's a small park, it has such high rental rates that we can afford to pay quality staff to run the place for us. And so that one makes sense, even though it is smaller than our normal criteria.
So let's talk for a second about numbers. I'm sure there's a lot of investors listening to this thinking, okay, what sort of ROI are you looking for when mm-hmm. you're buying a park?
I can tell you what we're looking for, and that doesn't mean that if you find something that's less than that it's not a good deal, right? Because it's all personal opinion. But I can tell you what we look for. We want to know that going into a park, either from day one or within the first year that we can very easily obtain a 16 to 18% cash on cash return. Like that's our going, and that's a levered return. That's assuming that you're going to be putting either bank financing or owner financing, 25, 30% down. Mm-hmm. But we want to know that we can obtain a 16 to 18% cash on cash return from either day one or within the first year. And then have the ability to push it over the 20% threshold in year two. And so that's kind of our initial criteria. Like that's our baseline. Like we really won't look at things unless they're reaching that high teens cash on cash return in year one.
What's the cap on that typically?
Yeah, you know, that's funny. I don't even look at cap rates. I think it's so irrelevant because cap rate is so subjective to how the existing owner is running it.
Sure.
So I don't shop on cap rates at all because the debt you're going to be putting on it has so much to do with what that property is going to perform and just how they're running it. Like how are their expenses? And let me give you an example of that. There's one of our best properties. I mean, it kicks butt. I mean, the cash on cash return is this year, I think, it's pushing 80%. It's ridiculous.
Oh
I mean, it's an anomaly. Yeah, jeez. I mean, it's so I'm not going to make people think that these things happen all the time. This one just is a rock star deal. But if we would have priced it, what we paid for it, if we'd have based it on a cap rate from how the park previous owner was running it, we basically bought on a 5 cap. But I can tell you very quickly, you fix some problems, some managerial problems, and operational problems. And within 2 months, it was effectively like a 15 cap from what we paid for it.
Wow.
You know, so yeah. Shopping on – we don't shop on cap rates. It's just – I think it's a waste of time. And most park owners that we purchase from, they don't do a great job of running their parks. And so cap rate really is irrelevant. It just doesn't really matter to us too much.
I got you. Yeah. And yeah. I imagine most of them probably aren't even great bookkeepers. You probably have to dig deeper to understand the real numbers.
I've received handwritten ledgers that are financials. I mean, entire profit and loss statements that are like handwritten. I mean, it'd blow your mind some of the stuff that, and you know, it's very common that talking to a park owner, I'll say, can you send me over whatever financials you have, rent roll? And he's like, well, what's your fax number? I mean, like I literally have a fax right now because like that's more common than like you tell them to scan it and email it. Forget about it. It's not going to happen. It's either right. Fax or they drop it in the mail.
Hilarious. I'm going to send a Western Union.
Yeah, exactly.
That's hilarious. Well, so speaking of financing, I'm curious, what sort of financing do you put on these things? How have you structured most of these deals?
Yeah, so it's one of two things. Either we get bank financing or we get owner financing. And quite commonly, we get owner financing. You know, what we find is a lot of the owners we buy from, they're aging and they've owned it for a long time. They own it free and clear. And a lot of them, once they realize the capital gains hit that they're going to take when they sell the park, owner financing becomes very attractive to them. Mm. You know, not only does it allow them to keep a cash flow that they're so used to from owning the park, but also allows them to mitigate their capital gains exposures. And plus, it's an investment that they know better than anyone else. You know, so a lot of times we don't initially go into a deal talking about owner financing, but a lot of times we can not necessarily persuade, but we can educate the owner to see that, to have him realize that it's in his best interest as well as our own to hold financing on the deal. So the 5 of the 7 deals that we bought this year have been owner financed.
Wow.
The other two are bank financing.
Interesting.
But you know, it depends on the size of the deal in terms of what kind of bank financing we get. The park that we just bought in Kentucky, that was a pretty small deal. I think that the purchase price was $750,000. It's a 68 space park. And we went with the local bank, and it's in a smaller market in Kentucky, a great market, but smaller market. And so there was 3 local banks that I kind of pitched a deal to. One of them didn't really get it. 2 of them loved it. And we went with one of the two, and it had great terms associated with it. And owner wasn't willing to finance it. I don't know why, because it would have been in his best interest to do it, but he didn't. And so we got bank financing on it.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, have you raised any private capital on like the equity side of things?
We have. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So we do syndications as well. In fact, we got 2 deals right now that we're looking or we're working on raising some capital for. They're property specific syndications. And so we do both. Yeah, we do that it really depends on where we're at in our current business. Like, you know, if we have a liquidity event and we just happen to refi a property and we end up with like, you know, a couple hundred thousand or $1 million of our own capital, mm-hmm. then we need to put that back to work right away. So there's certain times where we'll just put all of our own money into a deal and we won't bring investor capital in. And there's other times where, you know, we bring majority investor capital in and do a deal and put a little bit of our own money in. So just we do a little bit of everything.
Gotcha.
We do a little bit of everything.
Gotcha. Now, so talk just for a second about your team. You have a team there in – you're in Clearwater, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so how big is your team that operates this?
We're really small.
Right. Yeah,
we literally have there's three principals in our company, and we have, I guess you could say, two other staff, you know, one being that regional person that oversees our managers and another just being an admin or executive assistant. But that's really the gist of it. And then everyone else is in the field.
Sure.
You know, every single other person's out in the field. They're our on-site property managers.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so what's
obviously we have attorneys that we work with, and we have accounts that we work with. They're not on staff, but
right.
I mean, they're part of our team, but they're not on our payroll.
Yeah. Well, if you're spread out across multiple states, I imagine you kind of have a small home base and then everybody's out in the field. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
What's your goal? What's the ultimate goal? How many parks are you guys hoping to eventually buy?
You know, I can't answer that question. I don't know. I mean, I enjoy the game so much, and I enjoy the business, and I enjoy, you know, just the hunt of finding good opportunities. And so I can answer it this way. I don't plan on stopping anytime soon. Mm-hmm. You know, this year we bought more parks than we did last year. You know, if next year we buy less than this year, it's okay. If we buy more, great, you know, but I can tell you that our infrastructure is very scalable, and we've spent a lot of time putting the systems and processes in place that allow us to scale, even staying small, like staying very lean, but also, mm-hmm. I mean, we could easily take on another 10 parks and not necessarily have to hire any more in-house staff. You know,
wow.
It'd be pretty easy for us to do that. But my goal this year was to, in 2016 was to acquire 500 pads, and we've just exceeded that. So next year I'll bump it up a notch and say we'd like to add the 750 to our portfolio. So, and see how that goes. But we're very slow and methodical with our buying. You know, I don't like buying mediocre deals. I'll wait, you know, for the home runs, because we're not really forced to buy a lot. We don't have a big overhead or, you know, massive infrastructure we have to feed. And, I don't live an extravagant lifestyle either. I mean, you know, these parks make a ton of money, I'm not forced to buy a certain amount, and we're just going to buy what makes sense. And maybe that's 100 more, or maybe that's 10 more. Who knows? Mm. We'll find out.
It's very cool business. And you're just literally year over year just adding additional residual cash flow for yourself.
That's it. Yeah, we don't sell much. We don't sell much. But the only time that, in fact, we haven't sold any of our parks to date. The only time I would ever consider selling is if someone gave me in fact, the park we own in Atlanta, it's kind of, I keep bringing this up because that park there, I always say I will only sell if someone brings me an offer that I think is ridiculous, and then I think that property would never be worth that in the next 10 years. And we got, you know, we're in that type of climate now where people are paying silly prices for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got kind of an unsolicited offer that's out there on the table, and I don't know if it's going to go anywhere or not, but it's at that number that I think is silly, that I know for a fact that the property is not worth today, but it's 1031 money and they're trying to place it. And I will sell at the right price, because I've got some other opportunities I could leverage it into. But other than that, we're really buy and hold guys. I kind of look at the mobile home park spaces, you know, let's talk about the diminishing supply. So there's no more being built. And so if we can find and preserve the best parks in the best markets, then why would we sell? Because they're only going to be harder and harder to find as time goes on.
Right.
So what's the point of selling?
Right.
You know, because if I sell, I got to go find another one.
That's right. Yeah. You're exactly. Place that money again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So you've been in business a long time, and actually haven't even been doing this that long, but is there one deal in particular that stands out to you as your best deal ever?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a bunch of best deals. I mean, so you could talk about the apartment side, you could talk about the single family side, but let's talk about the mobile home park side. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned that one park that's like an 80% cash on cash return. And
that's crazy.
That is by far the best. And it's a smaller park, but it just throws off so much money. It's in Virginia. It's
okay.
in the Richmond metro.
Uh-huh.
The best part of that story is we found that on direct mail, but that was from our database. And that guy, I can promise you, he had never been solicited before on that park, because he responded to our letter so fast and was hounding us. And he was just kind of an older owner, and he was ready to get out of it. And normally owners don't act that way if they've been solicited many other times for people to buy their property. So anyway, we structured a really attractive deal. It's a 52-space park. We picked it up for $650,000. He financed it for us. And basically that park, just to give you some really rough numbers, we took it over. We bought that November of last year. The full year that we had was 2014. So his 2014 numbers, like for the full year, his NOI was like $36,000. I mean, it was a joke. I mean, he didn't make any money. The gross was like $250,000,
right.
And his NOI was like, you know, $36,000. So that's when I told you we basically bought it on a 5 cap.
Yeah.
I mean, when you actually run numbers. We bought enough. Well, I knew I identified the problems. I knew we could fix them. And within literally a matter of a month and a half, we already taken distributions out of the property. I mean, it was already running smooth, you know. And so that property today, we paid $650 for it. After paying our debt service, after paying all of our expenses and overhead, it nets us over $100,000 a year. And that's about $114,000 in this last calendar year. And that's like net. That's after everything.
Dang, that's crazy.
That property today, you know, based on the NOI, would be worth about we could probably sell for about $1.6 million. So, I mean, we added, and that's a great market. Richmond's a hot market, and we get listed on that park quite often because we talk about it now. It's like one of our strong case studies. And, you know, we've had offers on the park already in like the 1.4 range. So, you know, we basically added $1 million of equity really quickly. I'm talking like in a matter of like 3 months, like we could have easily turned around and sold it because we stabilized it. And it just throws off a ton of cash flow each and every month. And it's just crazy. It's a phenomenal deal. And it's a nice park. It's in a good area. It's a nice park. And it was already kind of stabilized when we took it over. It just had some operational problems. The guy over the 31 years he owned it, he just never learned the right way to run a mobile home park. It's crazy because he spent a lot of money and he took care of things. It looked great. He just did a terrible job at the operational side.
So he owner financed you guys. So he's getting money. He's
did.
Happy. He's probably kicking himself seeing how much you're making now.
No, you know, he doesn't know. I think he felt he took us to the cleaners, honestly, because he basically on his debt service, our debt service in that park, I think, is about $42,000 a year. So he's making more on his debt service from financing. And that's with us getting a big chunk of money down than he did the previous year that, you know, that he sold it to us. So I think he thought he was giving us like a bag of bricks. I've never really had a conversation with him. We pay him on time each and every month, but I've never had a conversation with him about, well, here's how we're doing today.
Yeah, right. Probably not worth it. Well, that's great. No, yeah, it's a win-win. You got, man, when your best deal ever is a win-win, everybody walks away happy. That's fantastic.
That's all that matters.
That's right.
All that matters. So
Kevin, you have an awesome podcast as well. It's called the Real Estate Investing for Cashflow Podcast. Maybe direct some folks. Is there a website we can send folks to?
Yeah, you can actually just go to kevinbupp.com, and that's where I actually host the episodes for the Real Estate Investing for Cashflow podcast.
Perfect.
Now, we have two podcasts, actually. So we do the Real Estate Investing for Cashflow podcast. You can find all those episodes at kevinbupp.com. Go on iTunes as well or Stitcher Radio. But that show, we cover commercial real estate investing. So we cover all asset classes. I interview experts in the industry and also just cover topics by myself on different aspects of the industry. But then we also have a podcast called the Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. That one is fairly new. We started that June of this year, 2016. And that one we do a weekly episode as well. But it is specifically on mobile home park investing. And so we bring some experts on the show. We also talk about our own business, our infrastructure, our operations, our systems that we use on a daily and weekly basis. And so, but it's everything and anything you'd ever want to know about mobile home park investing on that show. And then, you know, we host that show on a website called mobilehomeparkacademy.com. And we basically have an education platform as well where we teach others how to invest in mobile home parks.
And that's mobilehomeparkacademy.com?
Yep. mobilehomeparkacademy.com.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And we'll put that up in the show notes as well so folks can find their way there. Kevin, this is super informative, man. I appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, Ken, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the time. And I really appreciate you bringing me on as a guest.
All right, man. Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.
Hey folks, it's Ken again, and I want to talk to you for just a quick second about becoming a private lender with our company, Georgia Residential Partners. If you've got money right now sitting on the sidelines, maybe it's in a bank account earning less than 1%, or maybe it's in the stock market and you're worried about where the stock market is headed, you might want to consider becoming a private lender with our company. Where you might be getting 1% to 2% on a CD or a money market account right now, when you become a private lender with us, you're actually well into the double digits in terms of return on investment. Again, if you've got money that's not working for you right now, it's sitting on the sidelines, and you want to get it into investment that's safe, that's passive, and has the opportunity to get you well into the double digits, please reach out to me. You can actually contact us through our website at dealfarm.net. Go to the Contact Us page. It goes right into my inbox, and I will reply and set up a time to talk. Thanks so much for listening to The Deal Farm. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.